I would like, on behalf of the Board on Science, Technology, and Economic Policy, to welcome you here to the National Academy of Sciences. As you can see, we are located very centrally in Washington with the Department of State here, and monuments to the errors in our foreign policy on this side. We have a central place in the national dialogue on innovation. And as you may know, innovation is a key component to the creation of employment. And today we are holding our meeting in parallel with the White House summit on the formation of jobs being held by President Obama here in the White House, which is also just a few blocks away. I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the National Academy's Board on Science, Technology, and Economic Policy. One of the things that distinguishes this National Academy is that we have not only leading scientists, but we bring together a broader spectrum of policymakers, leading figures from industry, scientists, and others who help us formulate policy advice for our government. We like to joke here that the good news is that the U.S. Congress and the executive often listen to what we say. The bad news is that we have to get it right, and that is sometimes a challenge for all of us. But our work on innovation, which has become a globally recognized center of excellence, is focusing on a couple of things of great interest to your government and to your economy. One is a study being led by a colleague of Ambassador Alan Wolf, who is the chairman of our activity on comparative innovation policies. It involves best practice in state and regional programs, where we're trying to better understand the interactions between federal programs and state programs, but also increasingly the role of foundations that play an important role. We also have major work, a $5 million study that we completed on the challenge that most small companies face, that is the valley of death, where you have good ideas in the research community, in the laboratory, in the universities, and the question is how do you bring that across the valley of death and into the commercial world? The work that Ambassador Wolf is leading is one that is assessing the policies and programs around the world. And we're doing this for two reasons. One is that we honestly believe we have a lot to learn. Many countries are developing very innovative national policies designed to encourage growth of new industries in their economies. We also seek, quite unabashedly, to understand the competitive environment that U.S. firms will have to face. And there are elements of our government that want to understand the strategic environment that we will find ourselves involved in. But I would stress there's a very strong common scientific basis to what we're looking at. Many countries around the world invest in research. The trick is how do we make that research as good as possible, but also how do we convert that research into products and processes to enhance our health, improve and preserve the environment, and provide for security. These are some of the reports that we've recently put out. I want to stress that these are available with no cost at all. Anything that you'd like to take from the desk, please don't hesitate. Today's conference is, of course, convened under this work on comparative innovation policy. We had the pleasure of having many of you here a year ago. And we have, an even deeper and broader opportunity today. I would like to extend special thanks in organizing this meeting to President Michael Kleiber of the Polish Academy of Sciences. But I would also like to thank George Ostapowicz, and I apologize for our inability to spell George, but we all have to learn here. from the Foundation for Innovations Exchange in Science and Technology, and Witold Wisanowski from the Institute of Aviation. And of course, foremost among the people who have made this possible is George Handy, who's present here in the room. I hope many of you know him, and those don't, you should get to know him. He's a great advocate of Polish-American cooperation, and we thank George Handy for his instrumental contributions to this meeting. I would just like to mention that we have a number of upcoming meetings scheduled with one of our one of our smaller friends on the planet, China, where we'll be looking at a wide range of cooperative activity. And we also have an upcoming meeting that I hope some of you can participate in on national innovation policies for a green planet. And that is looking at a focus of what are the measures being taken to advance industries that will provide for renewable energy technologies. And last, but by no means least, we would like to thank a very distinguished group of sponsors. I'm happy that some representatives are present from Sandia National Laboratories today and from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's a broad range, and we are proud to have these types of agencies supporting our work. It is now my pleasure to introduce Alan William Wolf, who is a former U.S. Trade Ambassador, a distinguished member of the STEP Board, and chairman of this activity. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and let me add my welcome to you. As Dr. Wessner said, I chair the Committee on Comparative Innovation Policy. My particular interest individually has been China, because so much is taking place there at such a rapid rate. 2 weeks ago, I gave a speech on the effects of climate change on trade relations between China and the United States at the Beijing WTO Center, and the following day spoke to the photovoltaic industry in China, which I don't know, I can't evaluate the innovation in China with respect to photovoltaics, but I can evaluate the production. And with exports of over 90% of the photovoltaics that they are producing, largely which have gone to Europe, although Europe has become resistant, Western Europe has become resistant, Germany is threatening trade action, and Spain is ceasing to subsidize the consumption of photovoltaics. We live in an interesting world of interdependence and competition. In the Committee on Comparative Innovation Policy, we've looked at IMEC in Flanders, we've looked at Taiwan and Japan, and we have looked at subjects like the role of science and technology parks, which in this country have contributed enormously to innovation and spinning off a great deal of products that have been very successful. But they've also done wonderful things for economic development. In North Carolina was 49th out of 50 states in per capita GDP before Research Triangle was created. When Research Triangle was created, and the effect has been to put North Carolina in the top 10 of our states. Of course, you're familiar with Silicon Valley and Route 123 around Boston, and the Chinese have discovered this phenomenon. And I remember when I first went to China in 1988, looking out at Pudong across from Shanghai. It was just a field of farms, just as Silicon Valley, every third, when I started with the semiconductor industry, every third lot was growing plum trees. It was just orchards. You don't see many orchards now in Silicon Valley. So maybe it's the wrong contribution to climate change, but they would say in the semiconductor business that they're doing a great deal in terms of helping with the climate change problem. Subjects that are dominating Washington now are, first, health care, because that is what the Congress has seized with. It's the president's, one of the president's top priorities. Of course, Afghanistan, which is currently a major issue. I won't say we are in the shadow of Copenhagen. We're really in the glow of Copenhagen here, because we have to figure out policies that will fit with the challenges of climate change and economic recovery. We're meeting in the context of a number of things that are taking place, but one of them that is most of interest is creation of employment. It, I think, is going to be the central domestic economic policy of the next year. In the United States, we have unemployment of in excess of 10%. That is politically unacceptable. It's socially unacceptable. It's morally unacceptable. And it may even be an understatement, given the fact that people drop out of the attempt to, they drop out of the statistics after a while. So our job collectively on the STEP board, and I think the job in this room, is in fact creating good jobs for our peoples through innovation. And as Chuck said, today the President Obama is hosting a series of talks with individuals from a broad variety of disciplines, from academe as well as from business and labor, to hear their suggestions. And one of the key things that is talked about are green jobs, and I hope that the science advisor, Dr. Holdren, will be talking about how green jobs can be generated and will be in this process. Barack Obama, the president, said the following very recently, and this was to a group of high school students, and Dr. Holdren manages to capture the attention of the president very often, which is good in this country. It was not true of prior administrations, but he's done a phenomenal job in that respect, that our medical system holds the promise of unlocking new cures, sources of energy that power our economy, our also endangering our planet. We confront threats to our security that seek to exploit the very openness that's essential to our prosperity, and we face challenges in the global marketplace. And he had an answer, which is useful, that the key to meeting this challenge, these challenges, to improving our health and well-being, to harnessing clean energy, to protecting our security, and succeeding in the global economy will be reaffirming and strengthening America's role as the world's engine of scientific discovery and technological innovation. I don't think he was really confining himself to America. Many of our graduate students in this country are from foreign universities and will go back to their foreign, foreign homelands. It is really our task to fulfill this vision of the president's. In today's globalized markets, businesses have a very wide range of options, as you know. I was talking with the rector of Gdansk University, who said Intel has a facility over there. People will go, people meaning chief executives, will locate their businesses, R&D, and their productive activities where there is a location that is a good location to compete from. And it's a global set of possibilities. In the semiconductor industry, we looked at where American semiconductor CEOs place their R&D. And you would think, as we learned, that process R&D goes wherever the fabrication facility is located. So if Dresden decides to finance a fab, it will go to Dresden or Upper New York State or another place where a fab is built. Design R&D goes where there is a pool of engineering talent, and that turns out to be Central Europe dominantly. We thought it would be China, inexpensive, large pool of very good, at the high end, engineering talent in China. It is not going to China because intellectual property protection is not what it should be in China. So there are financial incentives, but the quality of workforce and infrastructure increasingly is determinative of where these activities take place. What one needs, obviously, are sound macroeconomic policies, also a key priority of this administration, a reliable institutional and legal frameworks, one of the reasons why China is not succeeding to the extent it would like to, with respect to attracting leading-edge technologies and R&D, as I say, the protection of intellectual property, availability of a skilled workforce, which means investments in universities and research facilities, and a technological, economic, and legal environment that fosters the commercialization of new ideas to the market. It's what everyone wants to do. If you listen to Medvedev and the finance minister and the deputy economics minister who spoke here a few months ago, he talks about green jobs. He talks about innovation. Every world leader is talking about innovation. What we seek, I think, in common is sustained support for research and development, investment in education and training, protection of intellectual property, new innovation partnerships to build high-tech clusters that can bring new products and services to market, something that Dr. Wessner has been very active in the work of the Academy, leveraging public and private funds, and supporting innovative small and medium-sized enterprises. Not an easy task. The challenge for our two countries is where we can get additionality by working together. To cooperate more and more effectively in areas of common strengths and interests. In our last conference, we talked a good deal about, for example, coal technology and areas of energy generation that would be clean and more efficient. We need to convert national investments in R&D into products for the marketplace. Poland and the United States share very strongly common interests, fostering economic growth at home and abroad, developing clean sources of energy, delivering quality and efficient health care, and I see that a number of members from the Polish side in this audience are participating in discussions on health care today. And we can use the advice, by the way, in this country, and improving global food and product safety and supply and improving security. Our feeling in the Academy is that international learning and cooperation can make a major contribution to foster success. So we are bringing together, this is what the National Academies does. I was asked by one person before this session began, what does the National Academies do? Very largely we have convening power. We bring together, it's not that all the brain power is in the Academy itself, although there's a fair amount of it. We bring together people like yourselves for events like this and for research papers that are tasked and conferences and issue reports to try to shape public policy in a way that's supportive of science and technology. So we look forward to exploring our common challenges, sharing our knowledge about what we've learned about best practices, and discovering opportunities for closer cooperation between Poland and the United States. A special welcome to President Kleiber of the Polish Academy of Science, Professor Orlowska, I'll mispronounce every name, my apologies for that, Deputy Minister of Science and Higher Education, this is more of a challenge, Trojanowska, close enough, Deputy Minister of Economics, and members of the distinguished delegation from Poland. Thank you very much.
It is now our great pleasure and deep honor to welcome the President of the Polish Academy of Sciences to provide some brief and introductory remarks.
Dr. Wessner has just left, but I hope it's just for a second. So Dr. Wessner and all other American colleagues who are our hosts during these 2 days, may dear Polish colleagues and friends, it is with a truly exceptional satisfaction that I very briefly take the floor ahead of the discussions to follow in specific sessions. It is a tradition that towards the end of a conference, someone takes the floor to thank the organizer for the effort that put in the organization of the meeting. I just wanted to modify the practice, just trying to thank the organizer right at the beginning. I think Chuck Westner and his American colleagues, George Handy, also colleagues on the other side of Atlantic, on this side of Atlantic, Marek Konarzewski should also be observed as an organizer. But also Jerzy Osipowicz and Witold Wiśniowski, some other colleagues, who contributed to the organization of this meeting. It was difficult. We succeeded in actually attracting very many people. And I just wanted to welcome all of you. It is a very special meeting. As we know, we have luckily managed to attract highly respected professionals coming from different spheres of generally understood R&D sector. We have with us high-level administration officers, some of them in the ranks of ministers. We have experienced and successful entrepreneurs. We have obviously scientists representing different areas of research. We have also representatives of funding agencies in both countries. Now, with all the effort which was put in the organization of this meeting, it seems a legitimate question is, why are we all here? What are the goals we set ourselves for the meeting? Obviously, it would be probably easier to draw some conclusions at the end of the conference, emphasizing the outcome of the discussions. But I think it is a valid question. We should reflect on why we actually decided to organize this gathering and what we expect from our discussions. Now, I'm sure we easily agree on challenges which have been actually a part of our life or the life of human race for centuries, but quite clearly we have new challenges which are in a sense more dangerous, more difficult to handle. They have global nature, and in that sense they call for international reflection. Some of the challenges appear not solvable at all. We have to deal with international terrorism, including the one in the cyberspace. In this respect, I just wanted to take reference to the conference which we organized just a couple of weeks ago with the participants from all over the world, from this institution as well, on so-called dual use, which, as you know, is the term describing misuse of research which were initiated for noble reasons and beneficial ends, but in the end they may serve the nefarious purposes, terrorism in particular. So this is an enormous challenge which we have to address. We have the problem of securing energy supplies and, which is the other part of the story, preserving the environment. We have a huge problem with multiculturalism, that is, with trying to accommodate different cultures on one space. We have difficulties kind of inherent in the health sector, which are so dramatically visible. It happens in both countries, actually, in the US and in Poland. And obviously we have the situation in global finances, which, if today almost under control, has a lot of negative, destructive potential also in the future. So one thing we know for sure, I'm sure all of us know, is that all these problems and many others can only be solved with the contribution of innovative and creative work of scientists. We shouldn't be making the following mistakes. Those of us today, and those who will, well, those who are today and who will continue to be tomorrow, the most creative in addressing the challenges that have been piling up around us, will be the winners the day after tomorrow. So in fact, our discussions, which may be quite interesting, for some of us even fascinating, because obviously we have a very positive, emotional stand on science in generally, they are also crucial. They are crucial for the well-being of the whole human race. Now, with the comments made by the previous speaker, I actually feel free to leave out all my very general comments on innovation because I entirely agree with what you said. I will just try to highlight a couple of points I think are important in terms of the meeting in which we participate. Let me formulate a couple of remarks on innovation as such. We have to remember that innovation policies, however different in different countries, were created in the context of traditional technologies. And today we face a completely different reality with fast production cycles, with many other aspects which make the picture entirely different. We complain, and rightly so, about the system of patenting innovations. The system is too slow, sometimes too costly, and it appears at times obsolete to encourage innovation. There are many philosophical problems related to what can and what should be or not be patented. This is a major issue which influences the innovation policy in every country, but it is also an issue which has to be taken up during discussions at a bilateral level. We have to be aware that the future of manufacturing is not a mass production. It is rather a mass customization by knowledge-intensive businesses, which makes a tremendous difference in terms of thinking of innovative manufacturing methods. Now, many experts in this country, as I know, complain that Americans are living off the economic benefits of a few last decades' investments in science and education. But this, as they say, is in serious crisis now. Whatever the accuracy of this statement, it is certain that you too have to rethink your approach to challenges of the world today. We have to do the same, even if for obvious different reasons, by which I mean our completely different history. Now, Poland has ambitious goals. For instance, we want to have the average annual growth at the level of 5%, at least, in the years to come. We want to increase the share of high-tech products in exports, significantly increase it. We want to keep unemployment below the 5% line. We want to have 20% of population in lifelong education. We want to reach the goal of 25% of students in science and engineering faculties. We want to reach the level of at least 3% of GDP spent on research and development. And we also want to have at least 40% of researchers working in the private sector. These are very noble goals, but difficult to achieve. Among the pressing challenges which we feel in Poland, as we know, and similarly to this country, Poland sits on coal, and everything related to clean coal technologies is of extreme importance for Poland, by which I mean clean power generation from coal, clean coal conversion into liquid fuels, including underground coal gasification. We obviously mean carbon dioxide capture, transport, and storage technologies. We obviously mean everything which relates to hydrogen-related technologies. Nuclear energy is another issue. Let me just, to be towards the end of my intervention, be more specific. I dare to mention a couple of areas in which I very much believe we and you should work in order to make as fast a progress as possible. I mean by that cheap solar energy, which is not that crucial in Poland, but it is extremely important generally, and in particular in economically disadvantaged populations. We have to develop rural wireless communications methods, which, as you know, would assure telephone and internet connectivity without a wired network infrastructure. Extremely important. We have to produce foods with improved nutritional value using GMO or not using GMO. We have to work on targeted drug delivery, which is possible, which is quite feasible, and it would have an enormous impact on the way we treat patients. We obviously have to think in terms of environment-friendly manufacturing. We have to work in the area of tissue engineering with the goal to design and engineer living tissues for implantation and replacements. A noble, a must, in a sense, goal is to improve diagnostic and surgical methods. There are many new inventions. They have to be implemented. This is one of the ways in which we have to deal with the health sector crisis. And last but by far not least, quantum cryptography. I just wanted to mention that because the security of communication is one of the pillars of the future of telecommunication generally in the world, and I think it's worth emphasis. Now, my final word, I'm trying to be back at the question I asked at the beginning. What we expect from discussions during these 2 days. First of all, we highly respect the U.S. science and innovation system. And it is very natural that we want to learn, perhaps you want to mimic some of the ways you innovate. we want to mimic some of your best practices, hoping that, on the other hand, we have something to reciprocate, and we have also something to offer to you. We have to identify all together, as we are here, additional and perhaps more effective ways to cooperate. Fortunately, and this will be presented during this conference, we have many people on both sides who know how to collaborate. But I think it's up to us to think of better ways to promote opportunities for collaboration, which are many, not all of them fully exploited. We would very much welcome discussions on intellectual property rights and the legal part of technology transfer practices. And also, I think it would be very natural at this meeting to discuss what we call now an open innovation model. We perceived the open innovation model as a kind of global revolution in the performance of R&D, whereby individuals and entire regions of the globe that historically would never interact can now collaborate successfully on projects in real time. Also, I think it would be an interesting task for us to discuss the way or to suggest improved tools and metrics to measure the outputs of research and innovation partnership, to guide policies and incentive structures. And of course, we have very many specific issues on the agenda, and I'm not going to dare to even touch on them now. We have ahead of us an interesting conference, and I wish everyone instructive and rewarding presence at the conference and also enjoyable time in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We welcome those comments and look forward to exploring many of the issues that you identified there today. It's now my great honor and distinct pleasure to introduce Dr. John Holdren. He is the assistant to the President of the United States for Science and Technology. That's an important title because it was one that was not the same in the previous administration. He is also director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and he is co-chair of the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. Before joining the Obama administration in the position he holds, he was the professor of environmental policy and the director of the program on science, technology, and public policy at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, as well as professor in Harvard's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences and director of the independent nonprofit Woods Hole Research Center. Dr. Holdren holds advanced degrees in aerospace engineering and theoretical plasma physics from MIT and Stanford. He is highly regarded for his work on energy technology and policy, global climate change. I'm sorry, we're not here. If any of you have phones that are on, we'd be grateful if they could be in a scientific conference, being able to press the suppress button is an important accomplishment. As I was saying, he is reflecting his many accomplishments. He is a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He is also a member of the National Academy of Engineering and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, as well as a foreign member of the Royal Society of London. As this brief review of his many accomplishments suggests, he is widely recognized for both the breadth of his interests and accomplishments and also the depth of these accomplishments. What may be less apparent is the effectiveness and commitment that he brings to public policy and to integration, and the integration of good science into good policy making. We are very grateful to President Obama for having named him, and we are very grateful to Dr. Holdren for joining us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that kind introduction, Dr. Wessner. President Kleiber, other distinguished members of the Polish delegation, American colleagues, it's my pleasure this morning to add my welcome and that of President Obama to the welcomes that have already been extended, as well as our wishes for a very successful meeting. I want to start with some observations on President Obama's conception of how and why science and technology and science and technology cooperation matter. The President has a profound understanding of the importance of science, technology, and innovation for all of the reasons that we in this room know they're important. He understands their importance for addressing the challenges that we face collectively in our economies, in combating disease, in confronting the great dilemmas of energy and climate change, in restoring and maintaining international peace and security, and more. He also understands the importance of fundamental science for increasing our understanding of our universe, ourselves, and what it means to be human. He understands the importance of science, technology, engineering, and math education for a whole variety of reasons, not just to educate the next generation of innovators who will help address these great challenges that we all face, but also for developing the technology-savvy workforces that we are going to need to be effective in the 21st century, and to develop the science-literate citizenries that we need so that our citizens can be effective participants in democracies in which more and more of the policy issues at stake are issues with substantial scientific and technological components. And he understands the importance of international cooperation in science and technology, bilateral and multilateral, for meeting these great challenges that we face collectively. In fact, the President has said repeatedly that these challenges are so great and our resources so limited that we cannot afford not to cooperate across sectors and internationally in order to find and implement the solutions. The President has made his insights and priorities in this domain very clear. He's done it in speeches, starting with his inauguration speech, extending to his speech the joint session of Congress, his speech to the annual meeting of the National Academy of Sciences at the end of April, his speech in Cairo, his speech in Albany, New York, when he rolled out an American innovation strategy for the 21st century, his speech at MIT a few weeks later, his speech at the award of the National Medals of Science and Technology a month or so ago. And just the other day, 2 days ago, the President welcomed the U.S. Nobel laureates for this year in the Oval Office. And in his remarks there again, he underlined these same points that I've emphasized here this morning. He's made those priorities clear in his appointments as well. Among the presidential appointments, there are now more than 25 members of the National Academy of Sciences, National Academy of Engineering, and Institute of Medicine. I doubt that has ever happened before in the history of this country. So many members of our distinguished national academies as presidential appointees in an administration. He's made it clear in his budgets, including more than $100 billion for science and technology in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the so-called stimulus package. He's made it clear in the meetings he has had with foreign leaders and the meetings he has instructed me to have with my counterparts around the world. I have now met with the science ministers or the science advisors to the heads of state of 15 countries, and I will be meeting with more to talk about how to rebuild or initially build cooperation on these various axes. And the President has made his commitment to science and technology and innovation clear in the initiatives he has undertaken. Those initiatives have included new science and technology bilateral agreements with Russia, with China, with Brazil, and many more to come. They include substantially revising the visa mantis system, which has posed historically some considerable obstacle to cooperation in science and technology because of the difficulties in getting visas that that system imposed. We have greatly streamlined that process now without compromising the security of this country. But I want to turn now to the specific focus of this meeting, which is cooperation between Poland and the United States on science, technology, and innovation. And in doing that, I begin by referring to the first U.S.-Polish Joint Commission on Science and Technology meeting that was held on March 19th of this year here in Washington. Undersecretary Professor Dozinski was leading the Polish delegation at that time. I was unable to lead the U.S. delegation because I was not confirmed by the United States Senate in my role as Director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy until March 20th, the next day. So I missed by a day the capacity to co-chair that first Joint Commission meeting on science and technology cooperation between our two countries. But I did get a full report of it. The side story there is that although one is able to serve as the science advisor to the President of the United States from Inauguration Day, one is not allowed to serve as the Director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy until confirmed by the Senate, and it is only in that latter capacity that one is allowed to meet with foreign visitors. So, again, I missed by a day, but I did get a full account. I did have the pleasure of meeting with Minister Kudryska and Vice Minister Dozinski in late June when they were here in Washington on another occasion. We noted at that time that the United States and Poland are celebrating in the year 2000 the 90th anniversary of U.S.-Polish diplomatic relations. Maybe someone mentioned that earlier. I was sorry I had to come in late. But the United States was the first country to recognize the newly independent Poland on January 29th, 1919, now more than 90 years ago. United States and Polish researchers have been collaborating actually for a very long time, even in the absence of the sort of formal agreement that was signed on bilateral science and technology cooperation in 2006 and led ultimately to this first meeting of the Joint Commission earlier this year. They had been, U.S. and Polish researchers have been collaborating, in fact, since the 1960s in the biomedical and behavioral sciences, with the most significant of those collaborations coming in the domains of cell biology, cardiovascular diseases, drug abuse research. And there has been a considerable program with our own National Institutes of Health working with Polish colleagues on capacity building and development of the next generation of Polish researchers in these domains. The U.S. Department of Energy, through its National Energy Technology Laboratory, has had for some time an agreement with Poland's Central Mining Institute and Institute for Chemical Processing of Coal that has been pursuing the domain of clean coal technology that President Kleyber referred to in his own remarks. At the Joint Commission meeting in March, there was a good deal of discussion on future cooperation in clean energy, in nanotechnology, in the health domain, and in biotechnology, all of these areas with tremendous potential for the generation of new products, new businesses, and new jobs in both of our countries going forward. I think this is very important. Although the topics of global climate change were not included in the agenda for that Joint Commission meeting in March, there is, of course, a substantial history of involvement of both of our countries in that domain. Poland, of course, hosted the Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention in 2008, December of last year, and a very important meeting it was. And we see many opportunities for building cooperation in the climate change domain between our two countries. Just for example, Poland has research stations in Antarctica and Svalbard and Polish research teams there. The United States has a substantial interest in polar research in these domains, and certainly we should be looking for ways to do more together in that particular area. But I'm rather than running through all of the areas in which we could build further collaboration, I've noticed that the agenda is about exactly that for the rest of the meeting. I am inspired by the array of distinguished speakers and participants on both sides who are going to address this ambitious agenda that you have for the day. And so I will stop simply by saying I wish you every success in pursuing it. I think this is going to make an important contribution to the process of building larger, better, and more effective cooperative activities between our two countries. Thank you very much.
We just have a brief moment. If anyone would like to ask a question before we break for the next panel, we'd be pleased to have one. If there are no questions, we'll have a brief quiz at the end of the day. All right, I'll take that to be an indication of the need for coffee. We're going to have a 5-minute break here, just 5 minutes while we bring up the next